This is Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. We're going live this hour to La Crosse, Wisconsin. That's where Senator Barack Obama is campaigning today. Winning the state is a key part of each campaign strategy to hit 270 electoral votes. And recent polls have indicated that it's a dead heat there. The latest Big Ten battleground poll shows Obama at 42% and McCain at 41, with a surprisingly large 12%. Who are undecided. We'll talk about that a bit later, which means more visits by the candidates over the next weeks to Election Day. When Senator Obama begins his remarks, we'll go live to La Crosse. But first, we're going to check in with Minnesota Public Radio's Tom Scheck, who is there to cover the event. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Carrie. How are you?
This is an outdoor event. Tell me a little bit about the setup.
Well, right now, the setup is that there's about thousands of people. They're saying about 8,000 people, Democratic Party officials were expecting about 8,000 people to attend a rally outside. And basically, it's moving from left to right down a main street in La Crosse. And at the one end, on the right end, there's a stage where Barack Obama is expected to speak, I guess, in about the next 10 minutes. Someone who's going to introduce him, this speech is going to focus mainly on the economy, we're told by campaign officials. And you can tell by the person who's going to introduce him. Her name is Nikki Brown. She's a local La Crosse woman. She works at the local Walmart and co-owns an auto repair shop with her husband. Mm. They have three kids and a combined income of $65,000, and they hold two mortgages. So she's obviously watching the economy and is going to be watching closely to what Barack Obama has to say.
You know, it's interesting, the timing of this, Tom, because, of course, we now know that the United States Senate is going to take up the financial bailout bill tonight, and we understand that both Senator McCain and Senator Obama are flying in for that. So I'm sure that's going to be on his mind. Do you imagine he'll be talking about it?
Oh, there's no doubt he'll be talking about it. Senator Obama is going to be talking about the yesterday in Nevada. He focused mainly, didn't even bring up John McCain's name at all during his 35-minute speech in Nevada. Instead, focused on the need, why they have to pass this mortgage bill. It's almost a little bit of politicking going on in terms of going back and forth against McCain versus Obama. They're trying to tell the American people why it's so important to pass this piece of legislation, that's so-called $700 billion bailout bill.
And of course, Senator Obama knows that there will surely be people in that crowd today who don't like the idea of this bailout bill. I mean, some of what he's been doing on the stump is trying to persuade average Americans that while they might not like it, it's necessary.
Yeah, and you'll hear him talk a lot about today about why it's important to Main Street. You know, they talk about how the credit market is seizing up right now. If you think about it, almost like the oil in the economic machine, that's what the credit market does. Banks that are going to loan money to these local businesses that are up and down the street on 2nd Avenue here pretty much borrow. They get a line of credit from a bank, and then they use that for payroll. They use that for inventory and those types of things. And what Obama and other folks have been talking about, especially the President Bush and the congressional leaders, they've all been talking about the fact that if this credit market seizes up, it's going to be more expensive for businesses to borrow money to meet that payroll. So perhaps they have to lay off workers. They can't buy inventory. And that goes down the line in terms of, okay, well, if we can't buy inventory, then what's going to happen is we're not going to, you know, start that infusion of cash moving throughout the economy. So the concern is not on the Wall Street angle, and that's what Obama's going to talk about. He's going to talk rather about, you know, the Sartori Arts building, the business that I see right across the street from me here. He's going to talk about those types of things to try and encourage those folks who are skeptical about this bill, you know, to support it and why he's voting for it.
One other thing you mentioned yesterday when we were talking about this, that La Crosse is a very strategic place to come to as far as the media coverage is. Why?
Well, it's a fertile ground, number one, because there's a lot of swing voters here, I'm told. The other reason is, if you go across the Mississippi River, which is just right across here, it's Minnesota. And if you drive 30 miles south, it's Iowa. All three of these states are critical. Both campaigns see them as critical in terms of, if we win these three states, we could very possibly win the election. If we lose these, you know, obviously if we lose these three states, we'll lose the election. So they're spending a lot of time and money, you know, with ads, visiting here, you know, trying to get out the vote in all three of these states to try and, you know, win the election.
That's exactly what I want to talk to David Cannon about, Tom. So thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Minnesota Public Radio's Tom Scheck is in downtown La Crosse, where Senator Barack Obama is expected to speak at an open-air event to a crowd of what Tom says is 8,000 people waiting to hear him. I'm going to turn now to David Cannon. He's a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning, Carrie.
Hey, you heard Tom Scheck saying that you get a triple threat here when you hold an event in La Crosse. You get media coverage in Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin. And it turns out that these are going to, again, be three very important states in the battleground. Why?
Well, clearly, if you look at the electoral map nationally, the Wisconsin-Minnesota border is a fairly unique border. That, given there's two battleground states adjoining each other, if you look at the rest of the country, there are only two other battleground states that are sharing a border: Indiana, Ohio, and Virginia, North Carolina. The only other pair in the entire country is Wisconsin-Minnesota. And so, for candidates campaigning on either side of that border, they're basically getting a two for one because the media market will spill over to the other state, and so across the local TV stations will be covering that. Indeed, Minnesota Public Radio is going to be carrying the speech, as Wisconsin Public Radio is. So you get a double dip, basically. You get coverage in both states when you go to those border communities. And so both McCain and Obama are really focusing a lot of attention on this part of the state of Wisconsin, which is a, you know, battleground area in a battleground state.
Well, and I want to dig into that a little more, because we've been hearing so much emphasis on Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida. But is it too much to say that as Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota go, so might go the White House? I mean, do these candidates really need this trio of states?
Oh, absolutely. These three states are critical for both candidates. Iowa right now appears to be the one that is most securely in the Obama column, if you believe the recent polls. Minnesota is the tightest of the three, and Wisconsin's kind of in between the two. If Obama can sweep those three states, he really is well on his way to the majority of the Electoral College he needs. He would only need to pick up then, you know, either Florida or Ohio, and then, you know, throw in, you know, the possibility of Virginia, North Carolina. You know, those would be icing on the cake at that point.
And what about Michigan? Where does that fit? Well, I mean, John McCain really needs Michigan, doesn't he?
That's right. Yeah, Obama, I think, is seen as being, you know, farther ahead in Michigan, and probably will, at least is leaning towards Obama right now. So McCain would need to pick up, say, Michigan and Ohio and maybe Pennsylvania if he loses Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. So these states really are key for Obama for laying the base of his 270 electoral votes that he needs.
So many moving parts on the Electoral College map, which is what makes it fun for us. If you're listening in this morning, David Cannon is with us. He's a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, ahead of a live event that we will go to when Senator Barack Obama appears in downtown La Crosse, open air. Event here. He's going to be introduced by a woman who is a co-business owner with her husband and the mother of three children. So as Senator Barack Obama gets up to speak, we'll go live. But in the meantime, talking here with David Cannon. David, break down your state for me. Tell me where we've talked about the border area here. Where are some of the other essential places in the state of Wisconsin that these candidates really need to close?
Well, the two key areas for Obama are the Milwaukee area and Madison. That he's going to run very strong in those areas. Upstate area will be strong McCain territory. So the other battleground areas, really the Fox River Valley around Green Bay, Wisconsin, that's much more up for grabs. Have a tight House race there with Steve Kagan, a freshman Democratic member who's up for re-election in a very tough race. And so that's the other probably most competitive area of the state. And then the western suburbs of Milwaukee that trend pretty strongly Republican, but Obama's been, you know, focusing some attention on that part of the state as well.
David, are you seeing a lot of the ads run in that state? I mean, it seems to me we are seeing more ads, I think, on our U.S. Senate race than I seem to be seeing on the presidential race. How does it look in the state of Wisconsin?
Oh, we're seeing a lot of ads. In fact, McCain was outspending Obama about 2-1 on ads through the month of September. And just recently, Obama's been picking up the pace a bit. But McCain has been putting a lot of money into Wisconsin, a lot of TV ads, especially in the Fox River Valley area. But here in Madison, too, we've seen a lot of ads on the local TV stations indicating that McCain McCain is even trying to reach into Dane County, which is probably the strongest part of Obama's base in the state.
Oh, that's interesting. Let me squeeze in a call here from Josh in Minneapolis. Hi, Josh.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I guess, Dr. Cannon, what I'm curious about is with Minnesota and Wisconsin and the polling numbers, it doesn't seem to me that minority votes seem to get captured very well with the polling numbers. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that and if the race is really as tight as people think.
Well, more so than minority votes. The trouble that the pollsters are having in this election is the youth vote. That's where you see a lot of different weighting techniques used by the pollsters because there are more and more young people in the 18 to 26-year-old age group that don't have landlines. They just have cell phones. And cell phones aren't picked up by the pollsters. And this is something that's been well known by pollsters as a problem in the past. But this is the first presidential election in which the youth vote is trending so strongly in favor of one candidate. Barack Obama is ahead 70-30 among the 18 to 26-year-olds. And so if you're leaving out a big chunk of the young voters, you really will have a misrepresentative poll. And indeed, there's a difference between the cell phone users and landline users in the youth vote. And so even if you try to weight it to bring them up to the population, that's even then that's not going to correct for the problem entirely. So my sense is the minority voters are actually captured because all of the pollsters use a weighting technique. So if they undersample for African Americans in their polls, they will bring it up to the state population with a weighting. But the youth vote, that weighting doesn't work because you actually have a difference between the cell phone users and the landline users. And so there are estimates that that could be causing the polls to be off by as much as 2 or 3%.
Wow. You know, let me just put out the number here to let our listeners know that we're waiting for live coverage here from Senator Barack Obama in downtown La Crosse, Wisconsin. When he gets up on the stage, we'll go live and you can listen to the event here at Minnesota Public Radio. 800-242-2828. As we talk in the meantime with David Cannon about the importance of Wisconsin and this upper Midwest region and then some of the other industrial states that each candidate would like to put in their column, 651-227-6000. You know, Professor, we talked about this weighting of the youth vote with pollsters a couple weeks ago. They assured me that they had formulas that can account for that. It's really going to tell the tale, won't it, on Election Day?
Absolutely. Yeah, in fact, there was a Pew study that came out just about 4 or 5 days ago that's the best analysis I've seen of this, where they really looked very carefully at the difference between cell phone owners and landline users, and that's where they found this discrepancy. And they pointed out that almost all the major polls, I mean, pretty much every one of them, will, again, wait for the difference in the sampling to bring up the number of youth voters to what that should be in the population, but they don't account for the difference in the actual preferences of the people who have cell phones and landlines, and that's where the source of the bias is.
We expect Senator Obama, who's supposed to take the stage here in a couple of minutes, to be talking today, David, about the financial bailout bill that he's going back to Washington tonight to vote on. This is a hard sell, and I'll bet it's a hard sell among voters, many voters of Wisconsin, yes?
Absolutely. It's a very controversial thing, I think, all around the country. I think a lot of it comes from people just not really understanding why this is necessary and seeing it as a bailout of Wall Street. And what you've seen just over the last 2 days or so is a real change in how political leaders are trying to explain this to voters and trying to sell it to voters by not being a bailout of Wall Street, but rather Main Street. And in fact, just your correspondent in La Crosse, Tom, mentioned that they're trying to say that the businesses right there on downtown La Crosse are being affected by this credit crunch.
Yeah.
It's not a bailout of Wall Street.
I mean, it is a very tough vote. I'd be curious to see what happens with the House, hopefully later this week. But for these senators, in the midst of all of this economic turmoil, to be out on the campaign trail, having to make this very difficult argument, puts them in a tough spot 4 weeks out from Election Day, doesn't it?
It sure does. And that's one reason they put a couple sweeteners in the bill, that the negotiations over the last couple of days. They added the tax cuts for businesses that would appeal more to the Republican senators and House members. They added the tax incentives for alternative energy to help bring some of the more liberal Democrats on board. And then it seems like one of the key things they changed as well to make it more appealing to local business leaders is the, and to people more generally as well, is increasing the insurance cap on the savings accounts for people from $100,000 to $250,000 as insured by the FDIC. And so that's an effort to try to broaden the base of support for this, both in Congress and in the public more broadly.
I'm going to see if I can squeeze one more call in here, but we will interrupt when Senator Obama starts to speak. So, Alana, you've got a minute. Your question.
All right, quick question. The new polling data from today shows the race breaking wide open in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Florida for Obama, but it's still razor tight here in the upper Midwest,
yeah.
And I was wondering why you thought the race wasn't breaking wide open here.
Good question.
Yeah, well, I think those polls you're referring to, the Quinnipiac poll that just came out this morning, did have the lead just opening up into double digits in Pennsylvania and other states as well. I think that what you're seeing in those polls is a reflection both of a response to the economic crisis, where I think John McCain had a very bad week last week in terms of how he responded to the crisis and the dramatic suspending his campaign and so on, and then having the whole thing fall apart, in combination with the presidential debate on Friday, where Obama, in the polls anyway, was seen as having beaten John McCain. And so these recent polls that are coming out in Michigan and Pennsylvania and a few other states are reflecting those recent developments, where we haven't had any polls in either Wisconsin or Minnesota since the most recent one I have is the 23rd of September for Wisconsin,
David,
and the 21st for Minnesota.
David, I'm going to interrupt here so we can go live to La Crosse, right. Wisconsin. Thank you very much.
Good.
Here's Senator Barack Obama in La Crosse.
So, Carrie, I don't know if you can hear me right now, but right now Barack Obama is about to take the stage. The co-business owner, Nikki Brown, just introduced him. He's shaking some hands right now.
Big crowd there, Tom.
Yeah, there's about 8,000 people here right now, and a lot of them are bundled up. It's a cool Wisconsin. You can tell it's October. You can tell it's starting to be fall because a lot of folks are wearing gloves. They're wearing jackets, and they're all kind of like standing on their tippy toes as they're trying to get a glimpse of the stage, because what's happening is there's all these people lined up on a street from left to right up into the stage, and so they're all trying to look over each other to get a glimpse of the Illinois senator. As you can tell, Nikki Brown introduced him, and what ends up happening at these events is the senator will come out, he'll start shaking some hands around the stage that's behind him, and then what they'll do is also that's a great time for the local photographers, the local press to take pictures of him, to try and get a picture of him in the newspaper for tomorrow. And then he's going to walk up to the stage, do a couple of waves, and then he'll say hello.
Tom, let me tell our listeners what they're hearing here. We're live in downtown La Crosse, Wisconsin, where Senator Barack Obama is going to hold a campaign rally. Tom Scheck, our correspondent there, telling us they were expecting about 8,000 people for this event. We expect Senator Obama to talk about the economy, of course, and about this financial bailout bill that he is flying back to Washington tonight to vote yes for. If you hear the music in the background, interesting note here, that's Bruce Springsteen, who we now hear has decided that he will play at an Obama event. He had earlier said that he was going to stay out of electoral politics this time around, but the Obama campaign playing The Rising and Bruce Springsteen later in the next couple of weeks expected to perform. Tom, tell us a bit about what's happening.
Well, Kerry,
there
Senator
he is.
Obama just took the stage.
All right.
Thank you so much. What an extraordinary crowd. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, everybody. I hear some of you were camping out last night. You get extra credit for that. Because it's starting to feel a little bit like fall. How many people went to Oktoberfest? I was sorry I missed that, guys. One more day? Whole weekend, huh? Okay. Well, let me call my campaign staff and see if I can have a pint with you. Can everybody please give Nikki Brown a big round of applause for the great introduction? I want to thank Pastor Melinda Papillo for the wonderful invocation. I want to thank Pastor Mark Jolivet for the Pledge of Allegiance. I want to thank your wonderful State Representative Jennifer Schilling for her strong words, and one of the finest young congressmen we've got in Congress, Congressman Ron Kind. Give him a round of applause. Thank you. You know, we meet here at a time of great uncertainty. Our economy is in crisis. I think everybody understands that. The dream of so many Americans are at risk. And the American people are waiting for leadership from the White House and leadership from Washington. You know, on Monday, over the course of a few hours, the failure to pass the economic rescue plan in the House led to the single largest decline in the stock market in two decades. Over $1 trillion of wealth was lost by the time the markets closed. And it wasn't just the wealth of a few CEOs on Wall Street. The 401ks and retirement accounts that millions count on for their family's future are now smaller. The state pension funds of teachers and government employees lost billions upon billions of dollars. Hardworking Americans who invested their nest egg to watch it grow are now watching it shrink. But while the decline of the stock market's devastating, the consequences of the credit crisis that caused it will be even worse if we don't act and act immediately. And that's why I'll be flying back to Washington immediately after this rally, because it is time for us to take some clear action. Because of the housing crisis, we are now in a very dangerous situation where financial institutions across this country are afraid to lend money. And if all that meant was the failure of a few banks on Wall Street, that would be one thing. But that's not what it means. What it means is that if we don't act, it's going to be harder for you to get a mortgage for your home, or the loans you need to buy a car, or send your children to college. What it means is that businesses won't be able to get the loans they need to open the new factories or hire more workers. Small business people may not be able to make payroll. Thousands of businesses could close. Millions of jobs could be lost. And a long and painful recession could follow. So let me be perfectly clear. The fact that we're in this mess is an outrage, LaCrosse. It's an outrage because we didn't get here by accident. This was not part of the normal business cycle. This was not the actions of just a few bad apples somewhere. This financial crisis is the direct result of greed and irresponsibility that has dominated Washington and Wall Street for years. It's the result of speculators who gamed the system, regulators who looked the other way, lobbyists who bought their way into our government. It's the result of an economic philosophy that says we should give more and more to those with the most and hope that prosperity trickles down on everyone else. A philosophy that views even the most common sense regulations as unwise and unnecessary. This crisis is the final verdict on this failed philosophy. A philosophy that we cannot afford to continue. We can't have 8 more years of this philosophy. We can't have 4 more years of philosophy. And that's why I'm running for President of the United States of America. Now, LaCrosse, while there's plenty of blame to go around, and many in Washington and on Wall Street who deserve it, all of us now have a responsibility to solve this crisis because it affects the financial well-being of every single American. There will be time to punish those who set this fire, but now is the moment for us to come together and put the fire out. You know, if your neighbor's house is burning, you know, you might grumble that they were always smoking in bed or leaving the stove on. But the first thing you want to do is make sure the fire is out so it doesn't spread to your house. You don't want to go around, you know, finding out what happened before you've put the fire out. And that's where we're at today. And I know that many of you are feeling anxiety right now about your jobs, about your homes. I see college students here. You're wondering, what kind of America are you going to inherit? So I want especially to say this to the young people, as well as those young at heart. I know this. I know that we can steer ourselves out of this crisis, because that's who we are. Because this is the United States of America. This is a nation that's faced down war and depression, great challenges and great threats. And at each and every moment, we have always risen to the occasion. We have always risen to meet these challenges, not as Democrats, not as Republicans, but as Americans, with resolve, with confidence. We've met these challenges with resolve and confidence, and with that fundamental belief that here in America, our destiny is not written for us, it's written by us. That's who we are. And that's the country we need to be right now, and that's also why I'm running for President of the United States. So this is not just a Wall Street crisis, it's an American crisis, and it's American economy that needs this rescue plan. And I understand why people would be skeptical when this president asked for a blank check to solve problems. I spend most of my time in Washington being skeptical about this administration. This time's been no different. And that's why over a week ago, I demanded that this plan include specific proposals to protect the American taxpayer, protections that the administration eventually agreed to, as did Democrats and Republicans in Congress. First, I said, we needed an independent board to provide oversight and accountability for how and where this money is spent at every step of the way. Second, I said we cannot help banks on Wall Street without helping the millions of innocent homeowners who are struggling to stay in their homes. They deserve a plan too. Third, I said I would not allow this plan to become a welfare program for the Wall Street executives whose greed and irresponsibility got us into this mess. And finally, I said that if American taxpayers are financing this solution, then you should be treated like investors. You should get every penny of your tax dollars back once this economy recovers. Now, this last part's important because it's been the most misunderstood and frankly, poorly communicated part of this plan. This is not just a plan to hand over $700 billion of your money to a few banks. If this is managed correctly, we will hopefully get most or all of our money back. We might even turn a profit on the government's investment, every penny of which will go directly back to you, the investor. So the rescue plan now includes these four principles. And it also includes a proposal I made yesterday morning to expand federal deposit insurance for families and small businesses across America who've invested their money in our banks. This will give a boost to small businesses, making our banking system more secure and helping restore confidence by reassuring families and businesses that their money is safe. But even with all these taxpayer protections, this plan is not perfect. Democrats and Republicans in Congress have legitimate concerns about it. I know many Americans share these concerns. It is clear, though, that this is what we have to do right now to prevent a crisis from turning into a catastrophe. And that's why I've been reaching out to leaders in both parties to do whatever I can to help pass this plan. That's why I'll be flying back to Washington today to cast my vote to safeguard the American economy. And to the Democrats and Republicans who oppose this plan, I say that this: step up to the plate, do what's right for the country, even if it's not popular, because the time to act is now. Now, LaCrosse, I know many Americans are wondering what happens next. Passing this bill will not be the end of our work to strengthen our economy. It's just the beginning of a long, hard road ahead. So let me tell you exactly how I'll move forward as president. From the moment I take office, My top priority will be to do everything I can to make sure your tax dollars are protected. I'll demand a full review of this financial rescue plan to make sure that it's working for you. If you, the American taxpayer, are not getting your money back, then we will change how this program is being managed. If need be, we will send new legislation to Congress to make sure the taxpayers are protected in line with the principles that I've put forward. You should expect nothing less from Washington. And if we do have losses, I've proposed a financial stability fee on the financial service industry so Wall Street foots the bill, not the American taxpayer. And as I modernize the financial system to create new rules of the road to prevent another crisis, we will continue this fee to build up a reserve so that if it happens again, it will be the money contributed by the banks that's put at risk. Now, this will only work if there's real enforcement and real accountability. And that starts with presidential leadership. So let me be very clear. When I am president, financial institutions will do their part and pay their share, and American taxpayers will never again have to put their money on the line to pay for the greed and irresponsibility of Wall Street. That's a pledge I make today, and it's one I'll keep as president of the United States.
You're listening to live coverage of Senator Barack Obama in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Now, accountability must start with this rescue plan, but it can't end there. Across Wisconsin, across the country, families are sitting down at the kitchen table and making hard choices. You're planning for your future in tough times. You're squeezing just a little bit more out of next month's paycheck so you can pay next month's bills. It's time for Washington to do the same. We can't mortgage our children's future on a mountain of debt. I look at all these young people here today, and I say to myself, the notion that we are loading up more and more debt on a war in Iraq that I believe should have never been authorized and should have never been waged. On tax cuts for multi-billion dollar corporations and some of the wealthiest Americans. That is not a good investment in the future. We can't run up a credit card, have a party, and leave our children to pay the bill. It is time to put an end to the runaway spending and the record deficits. It's not how you would run your family budget, and it must not be how Washington handles your tax dollars. It's time to return to fiscal responsibility and pay-as-you-go budgeting. The kind of budgeting we had in the 1990s. You remember Bill Clinton left a surplus for George W. Bush. Many in Congress have been fighting for these common sense principles, and I'll be a president who supports them and makes sure they succeed. That's why I'm not going to stand here and simply tell you what I'm going to spend. I'm going to start by telling you how I'm going to save when I'm president. We are going to go through the entire federal budget, page by page, line by line, and eliminate the programs that don't work and aren't needed. We should start by ending a war in Iraq that's costing us $10 billion a month while the Iraqi government sits on a $79 billion surplus. Think about it. Iraq has a $79 billion surplus. The notion that we are putting our tax dollars in at a time of desperate economic circumstances makes no sense, and we're going to change it. We should also stop sending $15 billion a year in overpayments to insurance companies for Medicare. And then we should go after tens of billion dollars in Medicare and Medicaid fraud. We need to stop sending $3 billion a year to banks that provide student loans the government could provide directly to students for less. And we can end the hundreds of millions a year in subsidies to agribusiness that can survive just fine without your tax dollars and use some of that money to help struggling family farmers right here in Wisconsin and all across America. That's what I'll do as president. We can't stop there. We lose $100 billion every year because corporations set up mailboxes offshore so they can avoid paying a dime of taxes in America. In the Senate, I worked across the aisle to crack down on these schemes. And as president, I will shut down those offshore tax havens and all those corporate loopholes once and for all. You shouldn't have to pay higher taxes because some big corporation cuts corners to avoid paying theirs. All of us have a responsibility, LaCrosse, to pay their fair share. That's accountability. And that's what we'll have when I'm president. As for the programs we need, we'll make them work better and cost less. I want to create a high-performance team of experts that evaluates every agency, every office, based on how well they're serving the American taxpayer. We can save billions of dollars by cutting private contractors and improving management and oversight of hundreds of billions of dollars that our government spends on contracts. And I'll finally end the abuse of no-bid contracts once and for all. The days of sweetheart deals for Halliburton will be over when I'm in the White House. Now, make no mistake, we need to end an era in Washington where accountability has been absent, oversight's been overlooked, your tax dollars have been turned over to wealthy CEOs and the well-connected corporation. You need leadership you can trust to work for you. Not for the special interests who've had their thumb on the scale. And together, we will tell Washington and their lobbyists that their days of setting the agenda are over. They have not funded my campaign. You have. They will not run my White House. You'll help me run my White House. They will not drown out the voices of the American people when I'm president. Now, people have asked whether the size of this rescue plan, together with the weakening economy, means that the next president will have to scale back his agenda and some of his proposals. The answer is yes and no. With less money flowing into the Treasury, some useful programs or policies that I proposed on the campaign trail may have to be delayed. But there are certain investments in our future that we cannot delay, precisely because our economy is in turmoil. Yeah, you can always put off giving your house a new coat of paint or renovating your kitchen or getting some new curtains. But when your roof is crumbling or your heater goes out, you realize these are long-term investments you need to make right away. If you've got termites in your house, you can't sit around and pretend that you don't. Well, the same is true with our economy. We can't wait to help Americans keep up with rising costs and shrinking paychecks by giving our workers a middle-class tax cut. We've got to do that now. We can't wait to relieve the burden of crushing health care costs. We can't wait to create millions of new jobs by rebuilding our roads and our bridges and investing in renewable sources of energy that will stop us from spending $700 billion a year sending it to tyrants and dictators for their oil. We can't wait to educate the next generation of Americans with the skills and knowledge they need to compete with any workers, anywhere in the world. Those are priorities we cannot delay. So as soon as we pass this rescue package, we need to move with the same sense of urgency to rescue families right here in La Crosse and across Wisconsin who are struggling to pay their bills and keep their jobs. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. We need to pass, to begin with, an economic stimulus package that will help people cope with rising food and gas prices, save 1 million jobs by rebuilding our schools and our roads, help states and cities avoid budget cuts and tax increases, a plan that would extend expiring unemployment benefits for those Americans who've lost their jobs and can't find new ones. And beyond this stimulus package, we need an economic agenda to restore opportunity for Americans and prosperity to America, so that we're not borrowing debt from China to buy oil from Saudi Arabia, so that the jobs of the future don't go to the better educated worker in India, and the cars of the future aren't made in Japan, that we can have a legacy of greater opportunity for our children and our grandchildren. That's how we'll emerge from this crisis stronger and more prosperous than we were before. That's what I intend to do when I'm president. I'm going to begin. Let me lay this out, because I want everybody to know the differences between myself and Senator McCain on this campaign. I will begin by reforming our tax code so that it doesn't reward the lobbyists who wrote it, but the American workers and small businesses who deserve it. I know you've been seeing some of these ads from the other side saying, oh, Obama's going to raise taxes. They're not true. I will eliminate capital gains taxes for small businesses and startups so that we can grow our economy and create high-wage, high-tech jobs for tomorrow. I will cut taxes. Listen, cut taxes, LaCrosse, for 95% of all workers and their families. If you make less than $250,000 a year, let me see a raise, show of hands. How many making less than $250,000 a year? All right. If you make less than $250,000 a year, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime. Because in an economy like this, the last thing we should do is raise taxes on the middle class. I will reform our health care system to relieve families and businesses and the entire economy from the crushing costs of health care. We're going to invest in new technology. We're going to emphasize preventive care so people aren't going to the emergency room for treatable illnesses. If you have health care, my plan will lower your premiums. If you don't have health care, you'll be able to get the same kind of health care that members of Congress give themselves. And I will stop insurance companies from discriminating against those who are sick and need care the most, because I know what it's like to watch a loved one suffer. Not just because of a broken health care system, but because, not just because they were sick, but because of a broken health care system. My mother died of cancer when she was 53 years old. And I remember her being on her hospital bed, arguing with the insurance companies, because they were saying, well, maybe there's a pre-existing condition. Maybe we don't have to pay for your treatment. I've seen that happen in my own life, in my own family. It is wrong. And so we are going to tell the insurance companies, do what's right by your customers, people who've paid their premiums, pay their claims, act the way you're supposed to act. We are going to make that happen when I'm president. So I'm going to make sure that we not only stop insurance companies, but we're also going to negotiate with the drug companies for the cheapest available price on drugs, because we can't have a situation in which senior citizens are having to choose between medicine and the rent because a few lobbyists in Washington were able to make sure that the drug companies were making billions of dollars of profits that they don't deserve. That is going to change when I'm president of the United States of America. We're going to make sure that we have an energy plan that finally makes sense for America. And I listened to the Republicans talking about drill, baby, drill. Now listen. Listen, I believe that we have to make sure that we have increased domestic oil production. But understand this, we are not going to be able to, by ourselves, simply drill our way out of the problem. We use 25% of the world's oil, and we only have 3% of the world's oil reserves. So we're going to tap our natural gas reserves. We're going to invest in clean coal, find ways to safely harness nuclear power. We can do those things, but we also have to understand that this economy needs to become more efficient. And so I'm going to help our auto companies retool so that the fuel-efficient cars of the future are built not in Japan, not in South Korea, but right here in the United States of America. I'm going to make it easier for Americans to afford these new cars. And I'm going to invest $15 billion a year over the next decade in affordable, renewable sources of energy. wind power, solar power, geothermal, biodiesel, the next generation of biofuels. We can create 5 million new jobs that pay well and can't be outsourced. Those old factories we can open up making wind turbines or solar panels. Those farms that are having a tough time, they can start growing switchgrass to create the next generation of cellulosic ethanol. We can rebuild our electricity grid, put people back to work right now, rebuilding our infrastructure so that we can get the energy that's generated from windmills and solar panels to the population centers that need them. We can create jobs. We can free ourselves of dependence from Middle Eastern oil in 10 years. And in the process, we can stop global warming. That is the great mission of this generation. And I'm going to make it happen when I'm president of the United States of America.
You're listening to live coverage of Barack Obama in La Crosse on Minnesota Public Radio.
And if I'm president, I'm superstitious, so if I'm president, I will meet our moral obligation to provide every child a world-class education from the day they are born to the day they graduate from college. Because it will take nothing less to compete in the global economy. I'll invest in early childhood education to close the achievement gap. I'll recruit an army of new teachers. We're going to pay them higher salaries. We're going to give them more support. In exchange, I will ask for the highest standards, the greatest accountability, but I'm also going to make sure our teachers are not teaching to the test, because I want our young people to learn art and music along with math and reading and science. And I want to all the young people who are here, I want you to know what I'm going to be asking for. I'm going to be asking for all of you to serve this country. Serve in the military. Serve in the Peace Corps. Serve in the homeless shelter. Serve in some capacity for your community. And in return, we will guarantee that every single one of you can afford a college education. You invest in America, we'll invest in you. Together, we're going to move this country forward. And finally, we're going to modernize our outdated financial regulations. We're going to put in place the common sense rules of the road I've been calling for since March. Rules that will keep our market free, fair, and honest. Rules that will make sure Wall Street can never get away with the stunts that caused this crisis again. These are the changes and reforms that we need. Bottom-up growth that will create opportunity for every American. Investments in the technology and innovation that will restore prosperity and lead to new jobs and a new economy for the 21st century. Common sense regulations for our financial system that will prevent a crisis like this. Now, I won't pretend that this is going to be easy or that it's going to come without a cost. We're all going to need to sacrifice. We're all going to need to pull our weight, because now more than ever, we're all in this together. What this crisis has taught us is that at the end, there's no real separation between Main Street and Wall Street. There's only the road that we're traveling on as Americans. And we will rise or fall on that journey as one nation, as one people. Now, this country and the dream it represents are being tested in a way that we haven't seen in nearly a century. We're involved in two wars. We've gone through the greatest financial crisis since the Great Depression. All across America, people are struggling. They're working harder just to get by. I meet families who have worked hard all their lives and yet have no idea how they're going to retire. I met a young person in Iowa who was going to school full time, getting 3 hours sleep, and then working the night shift because she had a sister who was sick and had to try to take care of her. Nobody was providing her any help. I've met guys who lost their jobs but can't go on a job search because they can't afford to fill up their gas tank. So I know times are tough. People are going through some very, very difficult times. And each of you out here, you've got your own story to tell. But I know that future generations will judge ours by how we respond to this test. Will they say that this was a time when America lost its way and its purpose, when we allowed our own petty differences and broken politics to plunge this country into a dark and painful recession? Will they say that we turned on each other? Will they say that this was another one of those moments when America overcame? When we battled back from adversity by recognizing that common stake that we have in each other's success, that all of us, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, young, old, rich, poor, gay, straight, that all of us have a stake in each other, that I am my brother's keeper, I am my sister's keeper. That's how America's always moved forward. That's how we've always moved forward, and this is one of those moments. I realize many of you are cynical. Many of you are fed up with politics. I understand you're disappointed and even angry with your leaders. You have every right to be. But despite all of this, I'm asking you in this election to believe. Believe in this country. Believe in your ability to change it. I ask you what has been asked. I ask of you what's been asked of the American people in times of trial and turmoil throughout our history. What was asked at the beginning of the Great Depression? In his first fireside chat, Franklin Roosevelt told his fellow Americans, there is an element in the readjustment of our financial system more important than currency, more important than gold, and that's the confidence of the people themselves. Confidence and courage are the essentials of success in carrying out our plan. Let us unite in banishing fear. Together we cannot fail. Think about that. Together we cannot fail. That was the motto of every great movement in our history. That was what moved us to overcome slavery. That's what moved us to give women the right to vote. That's what moved us to give workers the right to organize. That's what moved us during the civil rights movement. That's what moved us at every juncture. America, together we cannot fail. Not now. Not when we have a crisis to solve. Not when we have an economy to save. Not when there are so many Americans without jobs and without homes. Not when there are families who can't afford to see a doctor or send their child to college or pay their bills at the end of the month. Not when there's a generation that's counting on us to give them the same opportunities, the same chances that we had for ourselves. We can do this because we've done it before. You know, some of us had grandparents or maybe parents who said to themselves, I can't go to college, but I know that if I work hard, my child would go to college. Some of us had parents who said, you know, I may not be able to own a business myself, but if I put in the work, if I have a big dream, then maybe my child or my grandchild will own a business. There were women who said, maybe I can't vote, but if I work hard, maybe my daughter will be able to vote. There were immigrants who said, maybe I can't vote, and maybe I can't speak my mind, I can't worship who I want to worship because I live in a country that doesn't give us those freedoms, but I'm going to set out from distant shores to America. Because I hear that in America, anything is possible and you can always make it if you try. Some of us had parents who said, you know, I'm never going to be a United States Senator, but maybe my son will be a United States Senator. I'll never be the president, but maybe my son can be the president. Maybe my daughter can be the president. That's what America's about. Each generation working, fighting, so that the future is better than the past. That's the moment we're in. That's what we're fighting right now. That's what this election's about. That's why I'm running for president. And if you will fight with me and work with me and roll up your sleeves, if all of you go out and vote today, and tomorrow and the next day, I promise you, we will not just win Wisconsin, we will win this general election, and you and I together, we're going to change this country and change the world. Thank you, everybody. God bless you. And God bless the United States of America.
Senator Barack Obama speaking to a large crowd in downtown La Crosse, Wisconsin, at a rally there before he flies back to Washington, D.C. this afternoon to vote on that financial bailout bill in Congress on the floor of the U.S. Senate. Senator Obama ending on a note of optimism there, but in a speech where he talked at length about meeting at a time of great uncertainty and needing the American people to rally around this financial bailout package, even as he is aware that a number of Americans oppose it, saying at one point that we will punish the people who set this fire at a later time, but all of us now have a responsibility to solve this crisis. Let me bring David Cannon in here for the remaining moments of our conversation, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. David, as predicted, he talked at length about this bailout package, knowing that this is not popular in places like La Crosse and many other towns in this country.
Well, clearly it's the big issue that's on everyone's mind right now. So any stump speech right now for the next week or however long it takes till this bill gets passed through Congress, I think the candidates will be talking about this and trying to explain to the American voters why this is something that they need to do.
I note that, as I think Tom Scheck observed at the beginning of this, that there were some glancing references at the Republicans and Senator McCain, but most of this speech more about his own plans and his own vision. I wonder why. Do you have a thought about that?
Well, yeah, I think that there's been a bit of a backlash in the last week or so about the negative campaigning on both sides. And I think that Obama is trying to take the campaign to a different level. I've seen it here in the ads in Wisconsin where he has this one ad that's a longer ad. It must be almost 2 minutes where he just talks about his issue positions, his economic plan, and really doesn't mention McCain much at all. I think he's trying to do that more in his stump speech as well to try to, you know, bring a more positive message.
We're hearing a little bit of the music here from the rally as Senator Obama shakes some hands and talks to a large number of the college students that were there. He opened the appearance, David, you teach at a college, by saying that he was aware that some of the students had camped out overnight so that they could be there. He's relying on them turning out the vote, isn't he?
Absolutely. And this is something that really will be a new thing in this election, because the 18 to 26-year-old vote has always been the demographic group that has voted less than any other part of the electorate. And in this election, it appears that that's changing because of Obama's campaign. We had, in state after state in the primary, we had record numbers of young voters coming to the polls, and it appears that that's carrying over to the general election campaign, that there are thousands of young volunteers in his campaign. And again, in the polling data that we mentioned before, he's running 70-30 ahead of McCain among the young voters. So I think he really is counting on this youth vote in this election.
And David, one other note here. I heard him reprise the words that he used at that keynote convention speech in 2004 in Boston. I am my brother's keeper. I am my sister's keeper. That's the speech that really launched where we are today, isn't it?
Well, right. And I think the other message that I heard just at the tail end of the speech as well that came from that 2004 convention speech was this idea of one America, that we could only solve our problems if we're all together, if we're all working for the same purpose.
David, it's been a pleasure to talk with you, and I appreciate it. And I think we'll talk again before Election Day. Thank you.
Very good. Look forward to it.
David Cannon, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, giving us the view from Wisconsin as Senator Obama wraps up his campaign rally in downtown La Crosse and heads back to Washington, part of our ongoing coverage here at Minnesota Public Radio of both candidates as they visit the region. You may remember hearing 2 weeks ago the broadcast of Senator McCain and Governor Palin's rally in Blaine, Minnesota. Listen for full coverage throughout the day and online of Senator Obama's appearance here at MinnesotaPublicRadio.org. This is Mid-Morning.